Hey guys, what's up? Welcome back. It's Josh, JC Alfelto for The Writer's Lens. And today I'm going to be diving further in down the rabbit hole of the storytelling phenomenon that is storytelling. So if you missed the beginning of this kickoff for this next series, it was basically me running over what storytelling is, the power of story, and ultimately how we as human beings use story to portray a whole host of different things. And I mentioned kind of the Webster's Dictionary version of what storytelling is and what a story does. And if I could be so kind as to just bring that back in, it was social, cultural significance, dealing with entertainment, education, cultural preservation, and even instilling moral values. So these are a lot of big, big, big topics and not very easy ones to cover in the midst of one podcast episode. And I want to touch on each one of these in its own form as much as I can and as deeply as I can, but not to fill up, you know, airspace with 40 minutes to an hour of talking about it, because literally I think you probably could spend a good portion of your day actually talking about the ramifications and the consequences of story. But the thing that I did want to cover in this one is the meaning and the effects that story tend to have on us. And I want this to be like my part one session where I talk a bit more about the first two topics, talking about entertainment and education. And, you know, what is it that we can do through story to educate others and, you know, ultimately entertain them. So this is part one. And I want to start off with entertainment because I think that's the most common form that you see a story show up in, is to just entertain somebody, you know, for the sheer sake of just being entertained. Okay, I want to tell you a cool story. Okay, and even though you may not realize it, your brain might shut off. It's ready to go. It's ready to be entertained. And here we go. And this could be something I tell you in person. It could be a short movie. It could be even a podcast like this one that hopefully follows a decent narrative. There's all kinds of ways to tell a story to basically just try and get your point across, but also to be entertaining, because that's essentially what it is. Because stories that are entertaining are escapes. And I think that's probably the biggest conclusion anybody who's listened to stories before or read a book or watched a movie will come to the conclusion with, is that stories are good escape mechanisms. They present themselves as being vicarious experiences, especially if you go to the movie theater and you watch a movie about a hero character or perhaps a heroine, or you meet an underdog. I mean, the movie Rocky is one of the ultimate underdog stories of all time, even though there's probably about 7 or 8 of them at this point. I'm not discounting any of them. I think the most recent one was Rocky Balboa. I think that was the most recent one. But that one has some really good lines in it. I really appreciated seeing Rocky down the path and having his son all grown up in that one. I thought it was really cool. But that all aside, it gives us a bit of an escape in that we can live through another person. We can sympathize, even empathize to some level with the person that we're hearing about in their life. And it's a very powerful technique for actually learning about sympathizing with other people and understanding that people go through different experiences throughout their lifetime. But we may not process that because we're just there to be entertained. We're watching this movie, like I said, and even this also goes into reading a book and in reading about a person's personal, like their personal story or whatever it was that happened to them. But we do this also because it's a need that we have to be aroused. And I know that sounds kind of like dirty talk or dirty pillow talk or something, but it's one of the reasons why men will watch movies over and over again, because in a way men have this need for sort of visual stimuli to be aroused, and will repeat lines over and over again because that's part of our phonetic conditioning. We'll actually want to repeat things and learn different phrases. That's why you see so many guys that will be sitting around and they'll be repeating movie lines or popular quotes. It's because that's actually part of on our spectrum, is that men tend to do those kinds of things with each other. And what better way than with movies to do that? I mean, you're being entertained. Yes, it's a vicarious experience. Yes, well, you're also vicariously adopting popular phrases, quotes, or scenes from that story that become embedded within you and make the rounds, which I always think is a rather interesting interesting aspect of being a guy is that many times in a locker room, you could be standing around and someone could say a line from a movie and immediately everyone in that room begins to finish the scene for you. It's a pretty interesting phenomena, and it can happen in the workplace. It happens pretty much anywhere. I mean, I have five brothers, and I know that we sometimes succumb to the power of groupthink, and that we will finish each other's lines and sentences whenever there's a good movie quote that just gets thrown into the middle of the room. It's like a hand grenade. If my dad starts it, if my mom starts it, if my cousins start it, it doesn't matter. Someone throws out a popular movie quote, and then boom, all six of us just kind of immediately fill in the proper roles and are rattling this off pretty fast. So that's something that tends to happen in terms of it being an escape for people. And yes, I'm using an example from a man's point of view, but women, of course, use it to be entertained. I mean, men and women go to the movies. Okay, my wife comes with me to the movies. She enjoys them as well. Okay, this is not a male dominated concept. Okay, I just want to make that abundantly clear. Okay, this is a very equal concept in terms of entertainment. I'm just using an example because my brothers and I think as far as entertaining each other, we do a pretty darn good job of doing that with all of our movie quotes. But is escaping and is escapism, as it were, is that necessarily a good thing? Because I always want to ask that question since this is the writer's lens. I'm seeing these things through the guise of storytelling. Is it really a good thing that I'm offering someone an escape? Is it a good thing that I'm presenting a story that potentially could make someone go down the rabbit hole too far and think that this is their life, you know, perhaps, or who knows? Well, let's just start off with the good things first, okay, as far as it being a good thing. Are these escapes kind of good for us? Well, movies, TV, radio, magazines, all these kinds of mediums that we have now in the 21st century really boomed during the post-Great Depression era. And I did a lot of research on this because I thought this was really fascinating and interesting stuff, is that the reason why these mediums became so popular was because people were trying to escape their daily life. They were down and out. A lot of families still poor, still sloughing it during the Great Depression. And the problem with dealing with daily life, daily living, the reality of that, you know, we're just not getting anywhere. I can't even feed my own family kind of deal. Well, I'll go sit with some people who are listening to the radio, you know, and just kind of put my mind at ease. Or perhaps I'll try to sneak into a movie theater or something like that. Or I'll begin to try to, you know, read the newspaper or a magazine or something just to kind of pass the time until something comes along, you know, if I'm able to work or something like that. Really fascinating stuff. And there's a lot of articles online about this if you want to delve deeper into it or Google it or find it on Wikipedia or whatever you want to do. But it really does make sense when you think about it. I mean, when you have a whole society that really was struggling in real time, in real life, and it just seemed like there was nothing they could do to change their circumstances. Well, what do you do with your spare time? You can't just let a depressive state get you down. Well, you know, here's an escape for you. And here's also something that might be able to inspire you. So as far as escaping into story and being entertained, it can lift your spirits, emotionally can lift your spirits, and also almost inspire you in a way. Think of all the great superhero stories that we have right now in movies and cinema. I mean, I can't say that I walk out of a Captain America film wanting to don a, you know, an armor or armor. That's Iron Man. Wanting to don a you know, a shield and put on, you know, the flag all over my body and go run off into a battle against the Hydra agents or anything like that. But it does lend itself to make you think a little bit and inspire you a little bit to maybe want to be more of a patriot for your country. I would think so anyway, because of the fact that it's Captain America and I'm from America. And he's a cool character, so that lends itself a good argument. But that, to me, looking back at that time period, it just kind of makes sense. I mean, if you look at the natural progression of things, this boom that happens specifically to deal with reality, and one of the chief ways we deal with reality is we escape to things. And, of course, I'll get into the ramifications of that in a little bit. But as far as a good thing checklist is concerned, it gets you out of a depressive state, lifts your spirit. And it can even deliver you out of a bit of a cyclical, self-defeating frame of mind. Now, what about the bad thing checklist as far as being entertained with story? Obviously, probably one of the first things that comes to mind when we're talking about escapism and being able to escape from our troubles by being entertained is that it's not the ultimate answer to our problems. Whatever the actual chief diagnosis is that we're trying to run away from has not been alleviated at all. We're just using temporary stimuli to sort of get away from the pains or the realities of what's actually happening in our waking life. In fact, if escapism is happening too much, and this is kind of part two of the bad things checklist, then it may become our reality, and we lose touch with reality, a la The Matrix or something, where you know, everything is subjectively based upon whatever your perception is. So, granted, those things can happen, but it doesn't promote any kind of growth in terms of what's happening in your real life. So the idea of just being entertained all the time, I mean, there's a great line in Gladiator, I'm using it out of context, but when Russell Crowe basically says, "Are you not entertained?" It's basically like saying, are you totally missing the point of what's actually happening here? I'm killing people, and you're basically cheering for it. Do you not realize the ramifications of what you're cheering for? Are you not entertained? He's basically poking at the paradox here of the fact that, look, you're being entertained by the fact that I'm killing people. Shouldn't there be some sort of give and take here? And you're not really dealing with reality quite well. You know, would you have liked this to be yourself down here? You know, being gutted and killed in the gladiator pit. So there is something to be said for all this. So naturally, getting us out of a down state, if we're in one and wanting to be entertained constantly, is something that can become a bit of an obsession. It can become an addictive behavior. And I can't believe I'm actually going to do this, but my very first book that I wrote, which was Epiphanies, Theories, and Downright Good Thoughts Made While Playing Video Games, I have several chapters in that book where I'm actually covering this basic issue of escaping reality in video games, and how there are good things about it and there are bad things about it. Now, video games themselves have learned to go down an even more and more path of being a storytelling medium than they've ever been before. I mean, most successful video games have a storytelling narrative. They actually will follow a hero, a heroine, some sort of main character, and you'll follow it to the end. I mean, it's not like what games used to be where, like Tetris, where there was no like physical person that you were trying to get to the end goal of a level or something like that. It was just basically putting, you know, puzzle pieces together and trying to make everything fit. And in other games, there was, oh my gosh, I'm trying to think, like Pong, for instance, and you're just trying to keep a ball back and forth, and you're just trying to beat your opponent, okay? Video games have come so far in terms of entertaining us by incorporating deeper and longer and just more engaging and intricately composed storylines that people who play them get lost in them. I mean, I'll be the first to admit that I'm a huge fan of the Zelda series, okay? When I grew up on Legend of Zelda, I was wowed by the whole entire Zelda phenomenon when it came out on Nintendo. I'm not afraid to admit that because it was a huge part of my childhood. It was a huge part of my adulthood, actually, my early adulthood, still playing these games because the storylines were so good. And you just got lost in them. And it was like, wow, like whoever thought of this, to me, was either brilliant or was in a padded room somewhere where they were just saying, here, come up with another crazy idea or some kind of amazing world that you can just escape to and just get out of this thing called reality. And by the way, we're going to make a really engaging tale to go along with it because you have to have a good storyline if the person's going to connect to it. There has to be some person that you're connecting your emotions to want to continue the game through. So games that have become video games have transferred and into this whole new realm. They've transcended that whole realm of all I'm trying to do is beat my opponent. Now I'm actually playing through as a person. Zelda is just one example. I mean, there's just loads and loads more of them. But video games have now become an incredible medium for storytelling. They absolutely have become an incredible medium for storytelling. And their chief purpose is to be entertaining, to escape from reality. So in the same way movies, TV, magazines, radio have sort of filled our heads over the years, video games have taken that over. They've really taken that over. Now, I know the video game business, multi-billion dollar business as it is, hasn't been doing as well in recent years. I do know that, but I still think its power is very evident as far as influencing youth and filling up time even with young adults, older folks, even in their 40s that are still playing video games. I mean, I'm 32 years old as I'm doing this right now. It's the month of October. I'll be 33 in a month. But I can honestly say that every now and again, nostalgia hits me when I see a new Zelda game coming out or some Mario game about to hit shelves. And I kind of want to go back to it in a way. I want to go back and get lost. I honestly do. And part of that is the storytelling component. It's being able to follow a character on a hero's journey or whatever it may be to get to an end goal. I love that. But it can't be an absolute substitute for real life. It just can't be. And there is more increasing evidence of the fact that there's sociopathic behaviors. There's even potentially psychopathic behaviors that are coming out of those that are video game junkies. Okay, I mean, the time that I'm doing this podcast is also quite timely here in the States because it's only a few days after the Las Vegas shooting that occurred. And even as, and I don't want to say Vegas shooting, I want to say Vegas murder that happened because too many outlets and people are just calling this a shooter or a gunman. I mean, this guy was a murderer, okay? Understand the gravity of the situation by saying that he was a murderer and he murdered people. Okay, that's just wanted to get that off my chest, as that's something that actually was brought to my attention by my brother, Jonathan, which I thought was very insightful. He said, don't be desensitized by what you hear. This guy was a murderer. He was an absolute murderer, and that changes your perspective on it, and I agree with him. So I just wanted to mention that. But to that exact extent that I'm talking about this, getting lost in these video games. Now, this guy was 64 years old, and I don't think he was a video game addict, but there is more and more evidence showing that people who are linked to video game, excessive video game usage, shows similar reactions and synapses in your brain as to what you'd have for taking drugs or taking sort of antidepressants. This is a known thing, and I even wrote about this in my book from the research that I was doing. And but more recently, though, what's being found since I wrote this book back in around 2011, so now it's about 6 years later, wow, I'm beginning to find out that the inverse of that is true also, where it's more than just a drug or an antidepressant. It actually is creating hostile behaviors. And I was just talking about this with a friend of mine over the weekend about how video games, because of their realism now, and the stories that they tell. I mean, look at Grand Theft Auto is probably a great example of this too. And I don't mean to cut into more time or I want to talk about education, because I do have some things to talk about education, but I want to cover this one last thing real quick. Is if you look at a game like Grand Theft Auto, where the storyline is basically about a guy that runs around pimping prostitutes and blowing up things, and I don't mean to laugh on this whatsoever, but it's just kind of insane to think this is the kind of stuff that A, can be influential, B, is our escape, so to speak, and the storyline is one that's not admirable. It's not like a redeemable storyline. Now, granted, I've only played one of the Grand Theft Autos, and that was years ago, but if you watch a few of the commercials for advertising the game, I think you kind of get the hint what it's about. I don't think you have to put 2 and 3 and 5 and 6 and a bunch of other numbers together to come to the result and come to the conclusion that this is a game that promotes a lot of violence, promotes a lot of sexual promiscuity, things like that, and it's an escape. Again, it is an escape. However, because of studies that have been shown, even though this is a form of entertainment, this still has influence on us. This still has influence on us, and it has more influence on us because it is a story, it's a person that we can connect ourselves to, that's within the game. It'd be a lot different if you were just walking. If the game was just open range, you just picked a random stock character and you walked into a room and you just started blasting people with guns, yes, that may still have an influence on you. But I'll be the first to say that because there's story that's attached to this person, you want to sympathize with your characters that you're playing through on the video game and actually be lost in them and kind of have your vicarious experience in them. So There's a lot of research on this. You can check it out online if you want. And then, of course, you guys who are listening to this are free to interpret it however you want. I think you can kind of feel where I'm at on it, though. So on to the next thing. I don't want to spend too much time on entertainment as far as storytelling is concerned, but education, I promise you this will be just as exciting or slash entertaining as the entertainment portion of this podcast episode. Because when we think about education, and here's hopefully my hook, we don't think of it as being something that's that we would have storytelling involved with. Okay, we wouldn't think of, like, I'm being educated on some matter. I'm being given more information that I didn't have before. I wouldn't think of that as being something that I would have a story attached to it, right? Because when you think education, you think of, I go to school, my teacher stands up there, drones on and on about a subject, and then I'm supposed to process it. I take a test on it. I turn in my homework or whatever I do, and we move on with our life, and hopefully I retain a good portion of it before I graduate. This is something that happens all the time. However, storytelling does happen in terms of and having educational value. I mean, think of documentaries, for instance. Any kind of documentary that's done. One that comes to mind very quickly is the Blackfish documentary that made headlines years ago, which was basically telling the untold story of the SeaWorld Shamus, all the orcas that live there, and how there was all this incredible, I don't want to say oppression is the right word, but just mistreatment of the animals that were in those that were in these tubs, they're giant water tanks, and how the divers themselves were basically not animal experts. They were not trained people to be swimming with these creatures in the first place. So it's very eye-opening. I mean, it's very educational in that you can get this information. And there's a story that actually follows throughout this documentary. I mean, I also think of TV shows that would follow a storyline. And the Blackfish storyline, obviously, was to open it up with, have you ever heard of this? And then to take you along as the listener to tell the story of how things went from, they started out being technically good at SeaWorld and then started to turn very bad, very poorly, and then ultimately now we have a result. And if you think about the storyline arc that I talked about in my last podcast, it follows that. You have your opening, you have your exposition, you're giving more information, you have your rising to your climax of your story, which of a documentary usually is to where things really perhaps went awry or perhaps when the documentary was finally made, and then you have your conclusion thereafter. So these things do follow a story narrative. They absolutely do. And we as human beings, we become more plugged in when it does follow a story narrative. Because think of how would you view a documentary like Blackfish if it was just totally bits and pieces thrown at you randomly, okay? I mean, there has to be some chronological order that takes place in order for you as a viewer to stay engaged, stay interested, and actually want, and as our brains work and in terms of a chronological fashion, we want to be able to create a linear package. So we want to be able to look from point A to point B to point C and make connections and go, oh, okay, I see where you're going with this. This makes sense to me. So absolutely storytelling for documentaries happens in TV shows, which I was going to get into, but I wanted to make sure I got that point across on Blackfish. One of my favorite TV shows is River Monsters. Jeremy Wade is like the most awesome guy that I think is on television. Because the guy catches absolutely everything. I mean, he is a fishing show, but the guy catches absolutely every single animal that he goes after. I think there's maybe two episodes in like 9 seasons where this guy doesn't catch a fish. And the fish usually is some legendary creature that probably doesn't exist in the first place or maybe died years ago. And the only way Jeremy could catch it is if he like dug up the skeleton or something, or who knows. If it's a bony fish, that is. Because fish are made of cartilage and that's neither here nor there. But the point is that every single one of his episodes starts off with this sort of bang. I'm in the middle of Africa, and I'm chasing a creature that hasn't been seen for years and supposedly drags people under. And there's like this graphic scene of a person being pulled underwater by some giant catfish or something. And then it immediately cuts to him kind of walking into the town, and he's about to interview some people. And he's kind of giving a more casual now, like the emotions aren't as high anymore and they come back down. And the entire hour of the episode is this narrative of him chasing down this creature to ultimately come to the climax of catching the fish. And the whole time, you're being fed a lot of information. You're learning about a new country, perhaps, a new location. You're learning about a a people group that you've maybe never visited before. I love the show because of that reason. He goes all over the world and I learn all these unique cultures, societies, and cool places and rivers and locations and jungles that I'll never actually set foot in because I don't want to die. Okay. Like I won't be going there. However, the narrative is there and you see the storytelling element coming out there as well. Now, in shows like Finding Bigfoot, where they never actually catch anything, I would really question whether or not there is a storyline at all. It just doesn't happen. As much as I was kind of a junkie for that show when it first came out, but I think after the second season, I said, sorry, guys, unless I see evidence of it, I can't stick around. Maybe the climax just hasn't happened yet in Finding Bigfoot. I don't know. But I'm hopeful for those four guys that maybe they will find one day, but who knows. But on from there... like I said, you see it in TV shows, you see it in documentaries. They follow a storytelling format, which has an opening, exposition, you know, rising up to a climax, and then coming to a conclusion. From an educational standpoint, you'll see this, and even something even more basic like Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood or Sesame Street. Episodes are based around a concept or a theme, just like a book would be around certain themes. Okay, the color purple, for instance, like in Sesame Street, we're learning about the color purple today. All things will be relating around purple. The storyline of the episode is to be around the concept of purple. Purple is our hero today, or if you want to put it that way. The way that our brains try to put things in chronological order is quite fascinating. And you see that storytelling plays a huge role in how we interpret information and how we process information, and ultimately how we let it influence us, which... is what I'm going to be getting into in my next episode, which will be part two of this sort of the meaning and effects of storytelling, which I'll be covering later. But I did want to throw out this last term before I got going, which kind of combines the two. My English teacher, Mr. James Sankey, who was a huge influence on me in high school, he used the term edutainment every once in a while. And he said when it came to teaching, he had to be very careful that he wasn't being an edutainer. He wanted to be an educator first. And I wanted to just throw that out there because that is kind of like what you see in TV shows is a bit of edutainment, is that you get a combination of you're getting educated on some matter, but you're also being entertained at the same time because there's a story happening. So probably not good in the classroom in that regard. So I want to give props to Mr. Sankey for instilling that in me years and years later. So I did pay attention in class, but you get the idea. Story has its place in these areas in terms of helping us to learn things, even passively, like I was saying, to be given new information, because we're so busy following the story of something that we end up actually picking up bits and pieces of information that, you know, maybe we weren't even consciously aware we were going to. So again, all really fascinating, cool stuff in terms of storytelling. And that'll be it for this particular session. As my next episode, I'll be talking about culture and in the implications of moral values, which I've touched on a little bit already in this episode, but that's a huge, huge area that I do want to touch on, because obviously when it comes to storytelling, we're always thinking to ourselves, what is the lesson being learned from all this? Is there something I'm supposed to take from this? What's the moral of the story? You've heard that probably hundreds of times in your life. And now I actually want to dive into that completely into the next episode. So thanks again for checking this out, guys. I will be having another few interviews coming on soon here on The Writer's Lens. So stay tuned for that. And this coming Saturday, October 7th, like I said, I will be at Leanna's Books and More with a few other writers and local authors for a book signing. So you can come out, check out some books from 12 to 3 at the Shenango Valley Mall. And I will be there with also fellow author Derek Dean that I just interviewed. So you can check that out on YouTube. But he and I will be there among some others. Michael Praley, I know you'll be there as well. So I'm looking forward to seeing you, man. And I'll catch you guys later.